Hey, I'm just letting you know that in February 2023, I am speaking at my friend Andy Storch's event in Sonoma, California. It's called the Talent Development Think Tank. I'll be running a session on marketing your workshops. And on day three, I'll be hosting the 2-hour workshop blueprint session. I'd love to see you there. Head on over to leannehughes.com/thinktank. Enjoy the episode. Coming up next on Leanne Hughes's Work and Live Large.
So when you're fully connected, you have a good level of self-awareness, you know what drives you, you know your values and your purpose, you understand what motivates you, and you know what you need to do to take action to achieve what it is you want to achieve in life, or in that job, or in that relationship. Mm-hmm. And then the final part of it is that you focus on self-care and you prioritize self-care. And I think we don't tend to prioritize self-care unless we have a good level of self-awareness, because without the self-awareness, you often don't know what's going wrong or on in your body or in your mind.
Life's too short. You're here to work and live large. Here's your host with nothing to lose, Leanne Hughes.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Leanne Hughes, and I'm here to help you imagine what's possible is possible for you. Actually, today I'm not doing that, but my guest is absolutely inspiring you with what is possible. Her name is Mel Kettle. I'll give you her bio in a second. But this conversation has been really fun. You have those friends in your life where you can ring them up and just say, hey, do you want to try something? Do you want to go on an experiment? And they are like immediately receptive. I love those people. And Mel Kettle is like number one on the list. And so we explore that in this conversation in terms of what it takes to leap into an experiment, to back yourself in your decisions. And she relates that a lot to the self-awareness that you have on what your strengths are, how you like to operate, and how you like to take action. Mel also did a really great thing during COVID in that she left the city of Brisbane and moved to the Sunshine Coast. So I was really keen to find out, because from my perspective, it happened in a second. Like one minute they're in Brisbane, the next minute she's down the beach. And every time I catch up with Mel, she just looks extremely happy with that decision. Mel Kettle is an internationally recognized thought leader on fully connected leadership and communication. Her clients include leaders, teams, and organizations that want to achieve real connection and sustained engagement. Mel is a host of the This Connected Life podcast and the author of two books, The Social Association, published in 2018, and Fully Connected, How Great Leaders Prioritize Themselves, Reclaim Their Energy, and Find Joy. And I was honored to be at Mel's book launch recently in Brisbane. It was such a beautiful night. Really great to hear her sharing things about boundaries, which we also cover in this conversation. And what we do a deep dive on, which was kind of unexpected, was riffing on the theme of professionalism and how that plays out. It isn't all about dressing a certain way, but how you can be professional through your actions and also through self-care as well. A link to everything that Mel mentions is in the show notes for this one at podcast.leannehughes.com. And I know Mel is extremely receptive. So if you found any value in this, if you resonated with what Mel shares in this chat, definitely connect with her on LinkedIn, Instagram. She's on all the platforms as well. Enjoy this one. Chat to you soon. I'm so excited to welcome onto the Work and Live Large podcast, Mel Kettle. Mel is a great friend of mine, and it's always great to chat with you. Thanks for being here, Mel.
Oh, it's so good to talk to you, Leanne, and fingers crossed this one all goes according to the plan, like our last attempt.
Let's start off with that.
Listeners might remember.
Oh, gosh, I hope they don't remember. I mean, I very much remember. It was actually, it's funny and comical, very meta, because we were talking about experiments and the beauty of that. Do you want to provide listeners with a bit of context on what happened recently?
Yes. So Leanne and I were chatting about me coming on to her podcast again, and she said to me, are you up for an experiment? I'm like, always up for an experiment, you know that. And our experiment was that we were going to live stream everything onto every platform we could. And we, you know, came to the time and it was an absolute disaster. I couldn't really hear you. You couldn't really hear me. The people listening couldn't really hear either of us. And so we just called it quits after about 10 minutes. And I think one of the good lessons there is fail fast. When you know your experiment's failing, just fail it.
Yeah. And I think for the first bit, we're like, well, both like, come on, the show must go on. We must perform. And then it came to a point where I was like, literally just Darth Vader's. It was just so messy. Julian May, one of our friends, is like commenting and it's all delayed. And we just said, look, I think we should call it now. So I think you're right. Because we're sort of brought up with, like, you've got to push through, right? Do you want to sort of elaborate on that? That sort of, if you make a decision, you have to commit. Like, what are your thoughts on pushing through versus knowing when the right time is to fail fast and move on?
Look, I'm the person who, when I read a book, if it doesn't grab me in the first 50 pages, I'd get rid of it and move on to the next one. So I've always been taught there's a time when you do push through and there's a time when it's completely okay to call it quits. And I remember ringing my dad one day. I would have been in my probably early 30s, and I had a job that I didn't love. And I said to him fairly jokingly, is it too soon to quit? I'd been in it for a week. And he said, no, it's not. Better to quit now than to, you know, string it on and hate every minute of it. He said, especially if you know that it won't get better. And then he told me the story of how he was a teacher for one day. And we moved to England when I was a baby, and he had no job and, you know, was using up the family savings really quickly. And so the only job he could get was to be a teacher. And he realized in that day that teaching was not for him. And he said, I just didn't ever go back. I rang the school and had a, you know, long, hard conversation with the principal and said, this is not for me. Thank you for the opportunity. Please give it to somebody else. And I'd never heard that story before, but it was a really good example and a really good lesson in working out what's right for you and knowing what's right for you and not pushing through with things that are awful if you can't see an improvement in sight or if it's not serving you.
Yeah. I had a similar incident. It was like a dream job on paper, but after 2 days, I just felt, and it was a feeling, it wasn't logical, but it was a feeling like this is not working. And I remember going back to my mom. It's funny that you bring the parents in, and I thought she would have been like, just keep going, because that's what we're sort of taught. And we're sort of taught it's like, it's weak to quit. Like, that's what I associate. But she was also very supportive of that, which was surprising. But I just felt it in my body, and I knew inherently it would not change.
Yeah.
So it's nice to acknowledge that.
Yeah, it is. And for me, this particular job, I could see it getting better. So I stayed, and it did get better and it became great. But it could so easily have gone the other way. So I'm glad I stayed at the time. It was right at the time to do that.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, as well, I think in your heart of hearts, you know, when you come to make a decision like that, whether it's, you know, not reading a book because it's not grabbing you, or quitting a job, or leaving a relationship, or, you know, something bigger. Most people don't make those decisions lightly. The bigger the decision, the more you think through it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. And I think what sort of elements of what you're talking through in terms of, like, you know, I think it relates to what you talk about, which is connection, right? So, like, connecting into, is this right? How does it feel? But you've got to be aware to do that. Now, I love, you don't just talk about connection, you talk about being fully connected. And I'm curious if you can share, like, what is the difference or similar, like, what's your definition of being fully connected versus connected?
So when you're fully connected, you have a good level of self-awareness. You know what drives you. You know your values and your purpose. Mm-hmm. You understand what motivates you, and you know what you need to do to take action to achieve what it is you want to achieve in life or in that job or in that relationship. Mm-hmm. And then the final part of it is that you focus on self-care and you prioritize self-care. And I think we don't tend to prioritize self-care unless we have a good level of self-awareness, because without the self-awareness, you often don't know what's going wrong or on in your body or in your mind.
Mm.
And so it fully is, connected leaders do those three things.
That's awesome. And I think we were just talking about prior to hitting record about both of us are doing work, which is great, which is like after hours, different time zones. So obviously grateful for the opportunity. And I've got that nagging feeling like I've got to help everyone out that contacts me. But there is some element. I'm definitely not an evening person, so I might miss sleep. Or, I mean, I love working with the US because I'm always up early in the morning. That's when I'm at my best. And you talked about having potential boundaries around that. Can you share maybe what some boundaries that you have in your business?
Oh, absolutely. I've got a lot of boundaries. It's taken me 16 years to come up with this set of boundaries. And when I started, I said yes to everything. I let my clients ring me on weekends. I would do work on weekends. I sacrificed a lot of my personal time for things that, in hindsight, I probably shouldn't have. But at the time, I didn't know better. And I also had that fear of, if I say no, will there be anything else? Yes. Particularly with clients who were really good clients who gave me, you know, really interesting work and paid me what I believed I was worth. And so I had one weekend, I had one piece of work I was doing for one particular client, and we had a hard deadline of getting this particular thing to the printer on a Wednesday. And it was all supposed to have been completed on a Friday so that we could do a final read through on the Monday and the Tuesday, get it signed off by the client and the relevant stakeholders, send it to the printer on Wednesday. Friday afternoon, I hadn't even done the final edits because I hadn't been given it. And so it was sent to me at 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, and I spent about 20 hours over the weekend, Friday night, Saturday and Sunday, doing the final edits. And then the graphic designer had to sacrifice her weekend as well to put them into the final document. And this was a 100-page report. So it wasn't something that, you know, was quick and easy. And the client didn't seem to care that two of us were giving up our whole weekends and cancelling plans because of their disorganisation. So it was after that that I changed my contract with all of my clients and said, if you need me to work or want me to work after hours on a holiday or on a weekend, you'll pay me a $200 an hour surcharge on top of everything else, invoiced in 1 hour increments. So even if it was a 5 minute phone call, you'd be getting that $200 surcharge.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a couple of clients who would try to push things, and I'd say to them, don't forget, I can do this for you on the weekend, but it's a $200 plus GST surcharge per hour for every part of an hour. And the number of things that really were urgent diminished almost to nothing.
That is awesome. And I love that idea of like, I just got the idea from like obviously Uber surcharge pricing, but I love that you've got that for after hours, for things that are, and particularly when the client, there's been an agreement and your peers working together and then that happens. It's
absolutely.
Yeah.
And they weren't giving up their weekends. It was just me and our poor graphic designer. But now these days I work really differently. So I don't do that kind of work anymore. Now I run workshops and facilitate strategy sessions and do masterclasses and speak at conferences. And often that is called, I am called upon to work on weekends, particularly because I do a lot of work with associations and nonprofits and work with their volunteer boards. And so when you have a volunteer board, quite often the time that suits them to meet is a weekend or an evening. And I'm aware of that. So I factor that into my pricing now. And I certainly don't say partway through an arrangement with a client, oh, you want to meet at 6 o'clock on a Wednesday evening? That'll be another $500, thanks. Because I know that that's what's likely to happen. And so I can send my initial quote accordingly. And they can make a decision, yes or no. So that works really well for me now. But if you're starting out, you really do need to work out what's important to you and what your priorities are and create boundaries around them.
Mm.
Knowing that sometimes you're going to have that flexibility to open the gate and let something in, and that's completely fine. But that's on your terms, not on somebody else's terms.
I love Sean D'Souza. He talks about planning for chaos. That's how he runs his day. So So that's actually why I have parts of my calendar where I just book myself out, knowing that, I mean, great, if no one books that in, then I've got some deep work time and I can get moving on some things. But also, if something happens in a situation, I'm ready to respond to that. But you can't respond to chaos if you're sort of Tetris-y all booked out with other people in your calendar.
Absolutely. Yeah. The other thing I do is I don't tend to book in client work on a Monday or a Friday.
Mm.
And I'd use those times. Like, I don't tend to start work until after lunch on a Monday because I like to ease my way into the week. Attempting to get to a 3-day week. I reckon I'm about 5 years away from that, a few years away. And I tend to not do very much on a Friday afternoon. But should something really interesting or exciting come along, then those 2 days are available if I need to. And, you know, this week I ran a workshop before we started, jumped on for Nestle. And we did our tech check on Monday morning because that was the only time that worked for my client. And so, of course, I'm not going to be the prima donna and say, oh, I don't work on Monday mornings when I had nothing in my calendar that would have prevented me from doing that. And so, you know, sometimes you need to make things easier for other people as well.
Yes.
And the other thing I very rarely do is I very rarely have meetings before 10 a.m. Although having said that, now we're not in daylight savings in Queensland, and a lot of my clients are in New South Wales and Victoria. And so I do meetings before 10 a.m. for this 6 month period of the year. Or again, if a client comes to me and says, I really want to have a chat, but this is like 8 o'clock on Wednesday morning is the only time I can. And if I really want to have that chat as well, then of course I'm going to say yes.
Yeah, exactly. It's really about creating some constraints so it does open you up if you need to facilitate and be around, like, you know, to move things along with your projects as well. Now this podcast is called Work and Live Large, and I think I did an Instagram story maybe it was last month or two about, I think, you and my friend Tim, who have both left Brisbane for the Sunshine Coast, and both of you, every time I see you, like, have like this halo around you, you're glowing, and I feel like this, like, I've been stuck in the city, and I'm just so proud of you both for making that decision, because I'd love for you to share with listeners a bit about that, because it happened very quickly. Like, one minute moment you're in Brisbane, the next moment you're up at the Sunshine Coast. Like, what drove that?
You are not the first person to say that happened really quickly. Like all things that apparently happen quickly, it was not a quick decision. So I grew up at the beach. I grew up on the New South Wales Central Coast and loved the coast, loved the beach. And left there when I was 17, travelled, lived in Canberra, no beach there, moved to Brisbane, didn't realise there was no beach there until I'd moved there. Silly. Apart from the fake beaches. And loved living in Brisbane. And my husband had a child when we met, and he was 4. And I remember saying to Sean at the time, I promise you, I will, if we, you know, decide to stay together, and we did because we bought a house together, I promise you that I will not start any conversations about moving away from Brisbane and moving away from your son until he finishes high school. And at the time I thought, gee, that's good of me. And as time went on, I used to frequently think I would not be in Brisbane if it was not for Sean. So from when his son was probably in about year 7, I started to plant the seed and say, right, he's in high school now. What will we do when he finishes high school? Where will we move to? We'll have opportunities and we won't have things that keep us in Brisbane. And we had a few ideas. We talked about going overseas for 2 years and doing a volunteering abroad program. We talked about renting our house out and renting an apartment in the city. For various reasons, neither of those things happened. And then COVID hit. And one of my girlfriends, or two of my girlfriends in Melbourne, said to me during one of the many Melbourne lockdowns in the middle of 2020, we can only go 5 kilometres from our house. If you could only go 5 kilometres from your house, what would you like that to look like? And before that even finished asking the question, I said, not what I have. Whoa. Because I was nowhere near a beach, and I could get to the Brisbane River, but not a good bit of it. And so then a few weeks later, Sean and I were on holidays at a beach just near Bundaberg. And first day there, walking on the beach, I said to him, I'm ready to move. I want to walk on the beach every day. We need to move to the Sunshine Coast. Let's make it happen. And so we talked about it for the rest of that week. The second week of that holiday, we were at Sunshine Beach, which is the northern end of the Sunshine Coast near Noosa. And we spent quite a bit of that time driving up and down the coast, thinking, where would we like to live if we moved up here? What would that look like? What parts of the coast resonate most with us? And I also had a conversation with 2 or 3 friends who'd moved up over the previous 12 months to say, what's it really like? How is it impacting your business? And everything was positive. So we decided that we loved the southern end of the coast, went home, looked at realestate.com, came back 2 weeks later and bought the first house we looked at.
I mean, there's so much in this to unpack in terms of, okay, so there was, like, you planted the seed, you kind of knew this a long way out, but also when you were in that environment, that made it really quite real for you. It's like, this is possible. And then you started looking at options. And so there was like this goal that was maybe out there, but you brought it into like the present by just being around there and then obviously having these conversations. So,
yeah, I really believe everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
And that everything that hadn't happened, that was really disappointing because it hadn't happened, even though we were really comfortable with the decisions we made to not go overseas, to not move into an apartment. I really believe those things didn't happen because this is what was supposed to happen.
And that's the frustrating thing, that you don't know that will happen when you're navigating all these things that aren't happening.
Exactly. The other thing is, we weren't supposed to go to Bagara near Bundaberg for our holiday in 2020. We'd been talking about doing a 2 to 3 week driving holiday out to Longreach and Mount Isa.
That's right.
And we were just on the cusp of booking everything for that when Brisbane went into a snap lockdown 12 hours after the Premier announced the lockdown. And I just thought, I don't want to be more than 12-hour drive from home if things go into a lockdown and there's no real understanding of how long that might last. Mm-hmm. And if we were in Longreach, you can't physically drive from Longreach to Brisbane in 12 hours. It's about a 17-hour drive if you don't stop. And so we completely rethought all of our holiday and booked to go to Bagara instead. And if we hadn't been walking on that beach, I doubt that we'd be living in Caloundra right now.
Amazing. Imagine if you were in Longreach, though. You might be in Longreach right now. Life is so, the sliding door moment.
I know you'd never moved to Longreach.
I know. Oh gosh, but I have to, for anyone outside of Queensland, it's very much the outback. That's where Qantas was invented. Well, yes. Qantas is from Longreach.
Yeah.
Very much red dirt.
And Sean had lived in Longreach. He lived in Longreach in his 20s when he finished uni in the 90s and loved it. So he was really keen to go back and not to live there, but to just check it out again. And I just went.
I love those incidental moments. I mean, definitely go back for a holiday. So, I mean, exactly. What I'm really curious about, Mel, is we spoke at the beginning of this conversation around experiments and being self-aware as well. And I tend to notice, like, I've got a lot of friends that say to me, oh my gosh, you just seem to try things and take action. I know, Mel, you're very similar. Like, you just sort of jump in and leap. What do you think it is that builds that? And why do people sort of shy back from taking experiments in their business, in their work, in their life?
I sometimes leap in before I think, and I'll, launch something and then think, oh God, now I've got to promote it and I haven't sold any and it starts in a week and I might just quietly remove that webpage and not tell anybody. but I also think part of that's because I am attracted to bright new shiny things. I'm trying to be a lot more structured in my planning and thinking, but I also like to have that flexibility so that if a brainwave comes in or an opportunity comes up, I can give it a go. And hopefully not at the detriment of other things that have been more structured and thought out and had more energy put into them.
Mm-hmm.
But I like seeing where things take you, and I like experimenting, and I like, and it might not work out, but it might teach you something or show you something or pave the way for something that's better or that's meant to be. And I love the whole experimenting concept of one of my mentors, a man called Peter Cook, talks about experimenting in 100-day blocks or 90-day blocks. And I really love that. One of the experiments we did about 4 years ago was to go to one car. So we sold one of our cars and thought, we'll just try for 3 months what it's like being a one car household. And it was fantastic. So we've never bothered getting a second car because we've made it work.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, I think we try to, in our brains, envisage what the future will look like, but we actually never even know. And often I find there's maybe a negative bias, like, for trying the thing, because you're like, oh, if I do it, then it'll fail. But I think sometimes it's like,
but
that.
What if it doesn't?
Exactly. Well, that's it. That's exactly right. And I think a lot of people, and I know I'm saying a lot of people, it's also myself, but anytime I try to run an experiment, I really try and disassociate and take my ego away from it and going, let's just run this as an experiment. If it doesn't work at this time, all right, all good. I've learned something from it. But what I find is that even, I mean, because I had a philosophy this year, ABL, always be launching, just putting new things out there and having fun. But just, it really piques interest in people. And even if you might not sell something, there's something else, it just triggers something else for them or a new opportunity just by putting it out there.
Absolutely. And I as much as I admire that philosophy, I find it exhausting as well, because to do a launch properly is exhausting. And I've just launched my new Connected Learners book club, and I haven't really done very much to promote it, and the first one's next week, and I'm just like, rightio, I've got 9 days to sell 3 spots. How do I do that? What do I need to do? And, you know, I'm starting to tell people about it. So that's a really good start.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Are you deadline oriented? Like, do you?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, me too. So. And if it's if a deadline's sort of far away, I won't even look at it. It's like not even a priority. But the closer it is, I think that's a nice. So I think, yeah, maybe it's a certain personality type that seems to thrive. Yeah. I know we can be quite similar that way.
The good thing about my book club, it's a bit different to most book clubs because I read the books and tell you about them. So you don't need to read them and discuss them. The good thing is that I have chosen the books and I have read them all. So at least I'm not going to be getting to the night before going, shit, I've got to read 6 books before, you know, 9:30 tomorrow morning.
Yeah, that's
I've done that part.
Oh, yeah, that's it. That's the major part, right? It's actually like, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's fantastic. What book can I, what's one book that you're sharing in that book club?
So one of them is The Menopause Manifesto by Jan Gunter.
Yeah.
Since it was World Menopause Day yesterday, I can't not share that. Another one I'm sharing is Together by Dr. Vivek Murthy. He was the Surgeon General of the United States and talked a lot about his book's about loneliness and how do we overcome loneliness in society and at work.
And it's that's awesome. That's a nice variety even in those 2 books.
Yeah. So the plan is I'll talk about 5 or 6 books each month and also, you know, share the novels that I'm reading and maybe a cookbook that I'm using because, you know, got to mix it up a bit, keep it a bit different and a bit quirky to what other people may or may not be doing.
Yeah, that's it. Bringing it all. I had a conversation with some fellow consultants this morning about they're talking about, oh, you know, I used to be this person, now I'm this person. So I'm just going to cut off that piece. It's like, no, don't cut off your arm. Like, bring it with you. Like, the fact that you're an interior designer is actually awesome and will complement. That's how you build your uniqueness.
Absolutely. You know, I've been talking and writing about menopause for about 7 years, and I started a menopause blog about 7 years ago, which you'll find it really easily if you Google it, or you used to. There's a lot more now, so it may have slid down the rankings. Mm-hmm. I don't do very much with it these days, but I have won, I reckon I've probably won $250,000 worth of business directly as a result of that blog for business that's got nothing to do with menopause. But people, prospective clients will ring me and say, I'd like to talk to you about you coming and running a workshop for us or doing some strategy development for us. But first, can I ask you a question about menopause? I've just had a look on your blog and I've got a question.
That is incredible.
So we built rapport over that. And they know immediately that whether they love me or, you know, like or trust me. And so then they say what they want me to do. And I either say, I'd love to, or it's not right for me.
Yeah.
And if I say I love to, I have no competition. I always win the business.
Of course, because they've seen your work, they trust you, they relate to it. And this is what I love about what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. They trusted me with something inherently and deeply personal.
Yes.
Their menopause experience. Things that most women don't talk about.
Yeah, that's I love that because I think a lot of the time people are like, oh, you have to have a niche. You got to write all about, like, if your niche is coaching small business owners on technology, it's just every single piece of content is around that. Honestly, I would personally, if that was my niche, I'd get so bored just writing about that. Like, we shouldn't, just because we're business owners, like, carve away that. I think it's what you talk about as well when it comes to the word professionalism in a work context. How do you feel about that? How do we manage, like, being professional, being ourselves? Curious about that sort of dichotomy.
It's really interesting because I've just booked in for a photo shoot next week, and the woman who's doing it said, bring 8 different outfits and bring what you would wear at home, what you would wear when you're presenting over Zoom, and what you would wear when you're presenting on a stage. Mm-hmm. And I said, they're pretty much the exact same thing. Like, my ideal outfit, like, I'm wearing a dress right now, but I very rarely wear a dress, and I'm only wearing this dress because I love this dress and I haven't worn it very often. But normally my whole outfit is jeans and a t-shirt, and they're nice jeans and they're a nice t-shirt, or it's normally just a basic black t-shirt from Target, but it's clean and it's presentable and it looks black, not grey. And that's, I'm really comfortable in that. And so she's like, can you, and I just went, oh, I don't really know if I'm going to find 8 things, let alone 8 things that fit me thanks to COVID.
Wait, yeah, I know.
Whole other issue. But it was really interesting, and I thought you can be professional without wearing a suit and a tie, or without wearing a dress and heels and makeup. if you want to wear those things, absolutely. I'm not saying don't wear them. I wear makeup whenever I do anything in public because it gives me an extra edge of confidence that helps me perform better. Mm. But being professional for me is things like being on time, yeah, or being a little bit early, doing what you say you'll do, delivering on your promise, delivering value, not overcommitting yourself so that you're exhausted. It looks like getting enough sleep so that you really turn up and can show up and turn up, eating the right food, looking after your health, looking after your energy. And when you do those things, you exude a positivity and a professionalism that a lot of other people don't.
That's a wicked soundbite right there, Mel. Thank you for sharing that professionalism is linked to all of those important things that we think, oh, it's having a break, but no, that you need to do that to fuel you showing up and bringing your best.
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of people, COVID has been really interesting watching how people have viewed professionalism. One of my girlfriends ran a webinar and a guy turned up with no shirt on. And it's like, would you do that if we were meeting in an office or if I was presenting in an auditorium and you turned up? Highly unlikely. So what makes you think it's appropriate to turn up to a Zoom webinar with no shirt?
That's wrong. It's just wrong. Yeah.
It is. I know. And there was another time where I was in an audience on a Zoom listening to a keynote speaker at a conference, and he was in full flight and his little girl came in and interrupted him. And fair enough, his kid's his priority. But then he said, my children always come first. And I thought, if I was the client who'd paid you $20,000 to deliver this keynote, which I know is what you charge, and you lost your flow because you let your child come in and the other parent couldn't look after her for, you know, the half an hour, I would have been really irritated.
Same. Yeah, I'm with you on that. Yeah, and even when I've like sort of big calls, you never know the career might come along. So I put signs on the door, signs on the gate, yeah, mitigate what I can, even just for that 45 minutes or that container, because it absolutely is. Yeah, yeah.
I'm professional.
Yeah,
and you know, there's times when you present where there's different types of presentation. Like I just did a webinar before and it was much more casual than if I was giving a keynote at a conference, both on Zoom. I go to the same level of effort in how I look and how I present and how much I prepare. But if it's a webinar where everybody's on camera and there's conversation and you can see cats and dogs and kids and life that can sometimes intervene, I find that's a little bit more acceptable than when the spotlight's solely on you and you get interrupted by something that could have been prevented.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It is. It's the context and the situation that you're in that'll sort of help you navigate all of that. Now, Mel, are you ready for the rapid round?
Oh, I am.
What is a book that is...
Rapid round.
The rapid round. You can't really say no because I'm going to jump into the rapid round anyway. What is a book that shaped the way that you think?
Oh, far out. There's been so many. Can I say not a book, but my subscription to Harvard Business Review is one of the most valuable things that I spend money on every year. And it gives me insights to things that I would never have previously thought of.
Okay, that's awesome. I'm Wall Street Journal, but I might get HBR as well to just get some insight into that. That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. Do you have a favorite app or tool that you like to use?
Oh, look, I'm just glued to my phone. I think I'm
sitting in
focus mode on my phone. I'm actually using that a lot. So I'm loving the focus mode. And now that I've also discovered I can use it on my Mac, which I discovered the hard way when I turned everything on silent and all of these text messages started coming through and dinging on my Mac. And I'm like, I did not even know I could turn that off. I've only been a Mac user for 10 years. So I use that all the time now. And my phone goes into focus mode at 8 o'clock at night or 10 o'clock at night and doesn't come back on until 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I'm the same.
And I keep my computer in focus mode a lot more now as well. So yeah, that's probably my favorite thing.
Yeah, I know, just to get rid of all those notifications. Oh my gosh. And your Twitter would be like pinging all the time, I'd imagine.
I've never had notifications turned on for any social media. Okay. I've never had it on for, yeah, because I've never had notifications. All I have notifications for is text messages, some WhatsApp. If I'm in WhatsApp groups that are really chatty, I don't have any notifications on for them. I just go in and have a look once a day and see what's going on. Yeah. And I have, what else do I have? I have notification for, that's all. I'm just looking at calendar appointments.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Nice one. So the functional ones. Mel, you're about to give a big keynote. You want some music to get you motivated interstate. What song are you playing?
Oh, there's a song by, I think it's One Republic, called Connection. So clearly I'm going to have that one going.
It's like your anthem. I don't know if I've heard that. I'll have to find it after this.
It's good. I'll send you a link.
Sweet. And do you have a favourite quote?
Oh, my favourite quote is by Maya Angelou. People will forget. People may forget what you said. People may forget what you did. But people will never forget how you made them feel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I love that quote.
I love that. I completely resonate with that. Mel, tell everyone about your book, where they can find it and how they can connect with you if they'd like to talk more after this conversation.
Yeah, thanks. So my book's called Fully Connected, How Great Leaders Prioritize Themselves, Reclaim Their Energy and Find Joy. And I'm just holding it up on the screen. It's Amazon bestseller. Yay me. And you can get that or find out about me through my website, melkettle.com, or on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. Everything's at Mel Kettle. And you can buy the book, a signed copy from me directly through my website. Or if you want an ebook, then all the usual places, Amazon, Booktopia, etc.
Amazing. All right. And we'll put a link, of course, to everything that Mel has mentioned in the show notes for this one. And Mel, thank you so much for coming back, for being so patient with our first experiment. This one has worked beautifully. I've heard you. I can see you. And so we had a great discussion as well. And I've learned so much again from just having a great chat with you. So thanks for being on the show.
Oh, thanks so much, Leanne. It's been so much fun. And next time we'll have to have a chat in person with a glass of champagne or a beer.
Perfect. By the river. Or the beach.
By the beach.
By the beach. By the beach. Thanks again, Mel. You're the best. Thank you so much for tuning in to Work and Live Large. I really appreciate you. If you know someone in your network and you think, oh my gosh, they've got so much potential, like I want them to live and work larger, send them this episode. I think they might appreciate it. I also appreciate hearing from you, your feedback, your thoughts, your questions, anything. You can shoot me an email, hello@leannehughes.com, or find me on LinkedIn, just search for Leanne Hughes. Stay up to date with all the episodes by heading on over to leannehughes.com/subscribe, and all the best with your week as you go around living it up.